Give me a count around.
3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
P.O. Showtime!
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
The Linux Night Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Oh, yeah.
Free software.
Free speech.
Open technology.
And open mind.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios.
Here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link.
Link it up and take it away.
Kicking it off old school tonight.
Oh, yeah. I forget what this sounds like. And it goes on forever.
Forever.
Yes.
So it's got two out of four correct for this episode. All right.
Yeah.
Yo.
Yes, you are.
There we go.
Already established.
We were talking about you earlier. Welcome to
episode. Too bad, but I gotta go.
Episode 863 of the Links Link Sex Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Yeah.
We have Joel.
Fresh from the Southeast Ohio campsite.
Poppin' Fresh Rich.
From the Hughes Compound Southern Command, formerly known as Fraz.
And Joe.
From Texas.
And I have a question for all of you. If I say the word soddy potty, do you know what that is?
Soddy potty.
Nope.
Anybody remember soddy potty?
No.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
I don't know where that came up in my head. Like, I think it was yesterday, the day before. I'm like, soddy potty. I'm like, what was soddy potty? Oh, yeah. It was the precursor to Inkscape. Inkscape was a fork of soddy potty, a vector graphics program. Holy crap, that was, man, I forget how long ago. That was back in into mid 2000s, if I'm not. It was discontinued in 2004. So soddy potty was pre 2004. Anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there. I hadn't thought about soddy potty in a long time.
This moment in open source technology is new history.
Yeah. Now you learned something new, Joe. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Now you do. Take that to the Linux Mint cast.
Why don't you?
They don't want to know about soddy potty.
We'll have you on again.
Rotating Fuca desktop with their cubes rotating, flaming. Remember they had all that big
brouhaha,
or big split.
The Compass desktop.
The Compass, yes. Barrel.
And the cubes and the windows that would explode into flames and the wobbly windows.
Yeah.
And like the cube would go in the background. You'd have the aquarium in the back, and the fish would be swimming around it.
Right. In netbooks.
You had like the flaming materialize and the flaming dematerialize.
You can you still run Compass and everything. I haven't done it in a while.
Barrel. That's the window manager, if I remember right.
Right.
Yeah.
That was some good stuff back in the day. It's still. I'm gonna see it. It should still be available. Yeah. Compass. It's available in Fedora. It's available in Arch. I'm pretty sure it's available in SUSE. Probably available in Ubuntu. I'll tell you right now. Is it available in Linux Mint?
If it's available in Ubuntu and it's not a snap, then yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's not a snap, AppSurge Compass. Didn't they integrate some of that stuff into... Oh, now I want to see what PDF Cube is. A PDF document viewer with 3D effects. Yeah, Compass is there.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, man. You can't get PDF Cube for... for a Fedora. How much of a... Anyway. Joel, when are you going to 3D print yourself a camper?
That'd be a lot, man.
Just think, you would be the first person to do it, and you would be like...
No.
A 3D... What do you mean, no? Somebody's done it already?
Raspberry Pi cameras. 3D printed.
Well...
No. Camper!
Actually, Joe brings up a good thing, though, is campers and RVs are becoming just like cars. So there a lot of the tech that they're putting in cars are starting to put in campers, namely the backup camera. But if I buy a used camper, there is a huge, or a used RV, I should say, there's a huge chance that would not have one. Well,
anybody real men can back up their own trailers.
I was gonna say all anybody who, a good example is the campground we were at. Was the confines of backing up your trailer, or your RV was pretty confined, man. So I mean, it was pretty tight. So the backup camera. Is something that, hey, I could use a Raspberry Pi to build.
They're so cheap anymore, you hardly have to buy a Raspberry Pi and a camera.
Well, yeah. That's the case in point there. With the backup camera, I would probably just buy one off the shelf. A big reason is weatherproofing, because
going back to the whole 3D printing campers,
yeah,
they actually, 3D print homes.
This is true. But the thing I was thinking of, though, where I could use the Pi is either in an entertainment system for the RV with a screen driving a TV with a nice case on it or something like that. That'd be one thing. Another thing I was thinking of would be a security system of some sort.
Yeah.
You can do something like that.
My once again, don't get me wrong, I love doing it with doing that setup with a Pi for the entertainment system. And having it also as a MAME, multi-booting. But when it comes to like a TV system, your Roku stick only costs between $25 and $35 new,
or you just get a TV that has a built-in already.
That too. But couldn't you save all that money and just duct tape your wife's phone to the back of the camper, and then
do a hangout thing
between your phone and hers? And
that's an interesting thing.
Backup camera.
Yeah, but now that's an interesting thing, though.
You got an old $10 camera, or $10 phones that's still sitting around that you haven't used.
Well, I'm just saying you could just slap it on the back of the camper while you're there.
Well, I 3D print a mount for it, but
right. But tents now, though, and I had to laugh at this.
Did you have to back up your tent?
No. No, some tents that you can buy now have a... like a net that's in the ceiling, so you can put your iPad in it, so that you can be laying in your sleeping bag watching a movie on your iPad. And I thought, really?
That's camping. See,
Don't
enjoy the outdoors.
I was gonna say that's these Class A things are literally homes on wheels. They're no different. The only difference is your internet's not as good. Because you're relying on your phone or a hotspot.
That's the use for the Pi right there.
Right.
Having a local network.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, you can have like a media server or something on that. That way you don't have to rely on the internet. But yeah, you know, most campgrounds, at least state-run campgrounds, don't have Wi-Fi. But now, if you pay for like a site at I want to say Good Sam approved sites. I mean, Good Sam is like a club for RVers. And they do have like a program that where the certain campgrounds they'll display that their little emblem, you know, like KOAs will have Wi-Fi usually, but I usually prefer to state parks. Now, I will say that where I was, Burr Oak State Park, the campground really wasn't connected except for by driving to get to other parts of the park. So like I couldn't find a trail that could lead me out to the lake or something from the campground or to the beach from the campground. So we just hopped in the car and rode over to the beach. We also had to do that to get a shower in the morning because for some reason that campground only had one shower house that I could find. And there was a bathroom like right next to my tent. I mean, literally there was a men and women's bathroom right next to the tent. But unfortunately that's all it was a bathroom. There was no showers in there. So, but it's okay. In the morning we just hopped in the car and went down there, but you know, and you can run the gambit from pop-up campers that basically is just a mobile tent, essentially, to fully decked out RV with an engine in it that you would tow your car with so that you had. And that's something, if you do get an RV, that's one thing you want to look at, is can you tow your car? Like, I looked at both of my cars this afternoon. Which one could I tow? The only one that could be possible would be the Cruise, because the Traverse is four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. And the Cruise itself, being a front-wheel drive and automatic, if it was a manual, pop it in the neutral, just tow it on its what they call a dinghy tow bar, which basically means you have just a towing connection between the car and the RV, and all four wheels touch the ground. You just put it in neutral, and you put it in neutral, and there's a couple of fuses that you would have to pull so that it doesn't drain your battery while you're towing. Or you can also have a cutoff installed. So basically, you pop the hood once it's connected, and then flip a switch and it disconnects those three fuses for you automatically. That way you don't have to pull the fuse. But there are other cars that are better, more towable. But the Cruise itself will tow just fine on a dolly, where basically the drive wheels, the front wheels, are up on a dolly, and then that dolly itself has wheels itself. And then the rear wheels, you would just tow and you pop it in neutral, and that's pretty much it for that. So, but that's pretty much essential if you have like a Class A or a Class C. Class Cs are usually the truck bodies that are converted to campers. There's also Class Bs, although I'm not finding very many of those in stock. Class Bs are more like a van than they are like a truck. So
see, that's when you buy a conversion van and, you know, make your own changes.
Don't think I haven't thought of that. You can get like a Mazda, I forget the Mazda work truck thing, but you could do that.
Yeah, just an old full size van and a couple of modifications.
Yep, and there's the guy, one YouTuber I've watched, and it's interesting to watch it. This guy, he lives in the Pacific Northwest, and he lives in a Westfalia Vanagon. Vanagon was the VW's, probably the only major car manufacturer I've ever known to actually make in their own well, actually, they made the van again, and in Westfalia modified it to make it a camper. So that, and it's a very well equipped camper for the size of it. It's not that big. You can get a Vanagon's nearly not that much bigger than a minivan, in my opinion. But it has a refrigerator and a full kitchen, and a double bed in the back. Something like that would be too small for my needs, because we wouldn't have room for Luke if we wanted to come in. And actually,
well, it's bigger than a teardrop.
Yeah. Yeah, there are actually some that are really small too. Went to the RV show like a year or two ago. There's some that are basically looks very much like a pop up, but have like these panels that flip up, and they're just about big enough just for like a queen size bed in it. That's it.
Yeah, that's called a teardrop.
Yep. But there is on 3dprint.com, the first 3D printed camper has been completed. And it was two years ago. It's a lot of printing, man.
Right. What material would you use? They probably use like a cement mix.
No, this actually looks like it's plastic of some sort.
Well, it's not PLA.
It'd either be ABS or PETG, maybe. I don't know. Or nylon.
Or nylon or the carbon fiber mix.
Yep.
But it's got to be something, you know, heat stable.
Let's still be, yes, that's true. Well, not to mention that, a watertight, too, and the PLA is generally not watertight. You can make it that way. Let's see.
Your camper would also turn into a puddle in the sun if you use PLA.
Yep. Yep. His solution was...
That'd be a short trip.
He called his camper the Wave, but he says 3D print the Wave out of plastic in one huge solid piece using PETG pellets.
Hmm.
And his kind of looks a little bit like an Airstream.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Only took 9 days. He must have had a
industrial freaking printer.
Yeah.
Wait, did you post the link somewhere?
Oh, no, I looked it up. 3D printed camper. It's the first thing that pops up.
There's an article on 3dprint.com, and here's also one on curbed.com.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I wonder how much it costs to do that. Does it say?
I don't know, man.
You could have been the first, Joel, but you weren't there.
You'd have to print
it out in cubes. I mean, seriously. Yeah. Probably, what, 200 millimeter by 200 millimeter cubes?
Looks like he's printing sheets, though.
I'm saying you'd have to.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, on your print. Oh, yeah. We posted the same place, man. I didn't see that you posted that one. That's not that heavy. 600 pounds. That's not that heavy.
Like a stiff breeze would blow it away.
Yeah, that bored me. And this, definitely, you can see the striations in it. I don't know how watertight that would be.
Well, you 3D print it, and then you stucco it.
Well, you could putty it and sand it. That would help, and paint it. But I could use, well, and you know, I've 3D printed, like, I engineered some clamps I didn't use them this time. I actually went and bought a set of the metal clamps because they're a little bit smaller than what I made. But for holding the tablecloth onto the picnic table, tech I would put into, since I would be looking at a used RV, if I get an RV or use possibly a new to use pop up, I would look at adding things like I said earlier, cameras, backup camera, especially for an RV. But
at 600 pounds, you might as well just tow two of them.
On this one, yeah. 600 pounds, mine could easily tow that.
Have one of them like be a bed on the inside, and that's it. And then have the other one be like, you know, your kitchen. And
yeah.
Everything else. Give it a sunroof. Make it a little bit lighter.
It's interesting. I wanted to know. This guy must, like I said, this guy must have. He finished it 9 hours, which I don't know how you can do that. That's what he said.
It's nuts.
Yeah. The 3Dprint.com has more of the 3D print specifics on it.
I haven't looked at it yet. I just saw the YouTube video, turned the sound off, watched a playthrough, hoping he was going to show it printing. That didn't work out.
Yeah. I like the curbed.com link because it actually shows you what it looks like on the outside at the top, or what it looked like when he looks like he did a scale prototype first.
G. Printing a watertight single shell design.
Mm-hmm. That's not a big camper there either, by the looks of it.
No, it's not.
Actually, not 9 hours, 9 days still.
Yeah.
Still, though.
Yeah,
still,
that's still quick.
That's pretty impressive.
9 hours, 9 hours sounded a bit nuts.
Yeah, no, it said 9 days. So, I'm sorry, I misread that. But yeah, that 9 days is still an impressive time as far as I'm concerned. But I can easily see 3D printing stuff for inside of it, or using some pies throughout it, you know. For various things. Pod. Oh, is that what he used?
Yep.
How much do one of those go for?
I don't know.
I'm looking.
Printing a 2-meter Death Star in Madrid.
The Erector Bot measures in feet, not inches.
So I guess the cost is in thousands, not hundreds.
Probably.
I would say yes. Erector Bot pricing. Here we go.
Yeah, as much as it costs, I'd be really surprised if they listed the price.
Of the printer? Or the Erector Bot? For how much?
Yeah.
It's one of those.
Just the extruder costs
$2,800. $2,800. The main frame is $41,000.
Oh, you're seeing it $40,000. Okay, yeah. Some of the other frames, $44,900. So this is a $50,000 machine.
At least.
Yep.
At least.
I would say at least, yeah.
And then, my guess is you have to special order the filament.
Well, I'm betting, well, actually I know because the article says it uses a PETG pellet, so it probably has a barrel full of pellets and a vacuum that sucks it up into the extruder.
Don't get me wrong, it's cool, but I'm definitely not putting one of them in my garage.
Did somebody say extruder?
For sure. Extruder, dude.
There's an extruder, dude?
Yeah, a $3,000 extruder.
The Erector Bot. It's a 3D. No, it's a 3D printer that basically measures in feet, not inches, dude.
Yeah, but all right. So bigger doesn't necessarily have to be much more expensive.
This you one can... evidently does.
This one is. Yeah, this is one where this discussion started off with. I'm starting to look for either an RV or a camper. Because tank.
And you're gonna print one?
Well, no, somebody already did. They did it in 9 days using this Erector bot.
Oh, jeez. Well,
it was 3D printed with PETG pellets.
Cool. I like that. Yeah, I switched to an E3D V6 clone and on my Anet A8, and I think I finally got the retraction settings correct, and I got some good prints out of it. I mean, I've had good prints, but wanted to tune it. And I don't know if you guys saw the video, but I did print an AR9, and did I mention this last time? I blew the buffer tube off it?
Yes.
Okay, so my next AR9 is ready to go. And somebody looked at a picture. I was surprised at how quick they were to come up with some analysis. I did hammer the rear pin in, and I think I fractured the lower when I hammered the rear pin in. So guess what I didn't do this time?
You didn't hammer it in.
Damn right I didn't.
So when you blew the what did you say you blew?
So uh-oh, I feel a clip coming.
You blew the tube.
So the back of the AR-15 lower is where the buffer tube mounts, right. And from the left side of the rear of the pin, it fractured and then across. It didn't fracture from one side of the pin to the other, which was kind of surprising, which is where I would expect the failure to be. But, you know, I think it's strong. I think it should hold up. I'm just dying to fire off the next one.
So when you have something like that happen, when it does that, is that, like, how dangerous is that to you? Or is it just not...
So, an AR-15, the way the upper is designed, everything is pretty captive. The bolt carrier group goes backwards into the buffer tube, and if the buffer tube... the buffer tube houses a spring and what they call a buffer, which is basically a weight. And it's... The energy is getting dispersed as it comes back with the spring of the buffer and the buffer tube. I mean, the weight of the buffer and the spring in the buffer tube. I said that wrong. So when it hit my shoulder, it was kind of like, you know, what wouldn't have, if you threw a half empty beer can at my shoulder lightly, is how it felt.
Oh, it didn't cause like something that, like the barrel to explode or anything like
that. Oh, no. So all the important parts of the firearm are, you know, 100% functional and safe. Yeah, it's not like you had a squib load and you sent a second, a round stuck in a barrel and you sent a second round down the barrel. That could be deadly.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not overly concerned about, you know, test firing and, you know, printed AR lower because the AR-15 upper contains everything.
Right. No, okay. No, I got it.
And the bolt, is a locking bolt. So when it fires, the bolt's locked in, and then it's got to rotate back. Except on an AR-9, which is direct blowback as opposed to direct impingement. Is Pat still here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I figured if I was gun geeking out, I want to make sure I got somebody else here.
Yeah, I've had squib loads in front of them, and with factory ammo.
How much? I'm assuming that's 100% infill, Rich.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, and the
Which
other sucky
that
thing.
Takes a long time.
So YouTube, yeah, it takes like 39 hours for the AR-9 lower I've been printing. The so
if you had an erector bot, that could print that. You could print 20 of them in 1 minute.
So one of the bad things, like if you upload 3D printed firearms or even talk about them, YouTube demonetizes your video, which doesn't mean it just means it gets less exposure and most advertisers won't advertise on your video. But the solution to that,
they'll have advertising put on it.
Right. Right. So
not the people creating the video.
So the people, you know, in the 2A community, what they would do is they might post a teaser on YouTube and then a link in their description over to GunStreamer. It's like, hey, you want to see how to tear this firearm down? I've showed you everything I legally can on YouTube without getting banned. Click the link in the description below to see everything you can't see on YouTube. GunStreamer's going out of business at the end of the month. So it kind of sucks because there's certain content that was legal on YouTube that they deemed, you know, no longer legal, and you had to move it, and I moved it to GunStreamer. So now I got to find a new home. So there's, you know, Full 30, BitChute, and GunTube. I'm not sure.
Should sell the mobile app to Full 30.
Yeah, I don't know anything official, but it would be nice if those guys got together.
They should use it.
And I a while back I did reserve Flying Rich on Full 30, and I know a guy that knows somebody, so I'll probably be on Full 30 in the future. And anybody knows, Pat would be a good one. Do you know what the Full 30 is, what that term means, where it came from? Oh, actually, it's Full 9 Yards. I'm sure. Sorry, Full 9 Yards. I'm cross.
Well, Full 30 is 30 automatic.
Right, right. But does anybody know the term, the Full 9 Yards, all 9 yards?
Yeah.
Enlighten us.
Did Pat say yes, he does?
I think so.
He does.
Go for it.
Well, what is it? Is it like football?
Oh. No, it's not football. Believe it or not, not football. In aircraft, the machine guns had 9 yards of ammunition. So when you gave them all 9 yards...
How many rounds would that be in 9 yards?
You know, I really don't... Yeah, I was thinking, what is it 50 cal that they use in the airplanes?
Yeah, they would have 50 cal.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to ask somebody. I've actually never shot. I missed out on shooting belt fed 50.
Boy, the bird's chatting.
I hear the bird. Pebbles?
Yep.
Is he on your shoulder?
It's right in front of my face. So, anybody, I should send you a link. It's theregister.com. Fujitsu Japan strong armed their way to top with world's fastest known supercomputer. 415 petaflops. And what makes it unique is it's ARM based. So it contains. Let's see, packed supports 7.3 million 64-bit CPU cores, clocked at 2.2 gigahertz, packed into 152,064 48-core ARM-compatible Fujitsu-designed A64FX processors.
How many Raspberry Pis do they tie together? Did you have a link for that? What is it?
Let's see. I could throw it in the IRC if I logged in.
Or you could just drop it in Mumble and I can put it in the IRC too.
Yeah, but I have it on a separate computer. If you just Google ARM supercomputer, I'm sure you'll find it.
Alright.
Speaking of ARM.
It's on the Verge or on the Register?
The Register. I still haven't opened up the 2 8-gig Raspberry Pi 4s that I got. They're still in the original box.
Maybe you can just buy a new MacBook instead later this year. That's a good segue. Apple announced this week at WWDC they are transitioning processors yet again from Intel to ARM, specifically their own silicon.
That's been in the works for, I would say, almost 10 years. Actually, might be more than 10 years now. I mean,
if you look at the map and you look at their marketing on the iPad Pros and how they were focusing on this, the iPad Pro is faster than most mainstream PCs and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, yeah. So, I mean, in the phrase there, and by far, I think of all of their transitions, this one will be the easiest one because they basically wrote Mac OS and such that it's just they're getting so much by doing this, because not only will the MacBook run standard Mac apps, but it'll run iOS apps too.
Yeah, so now basically they have one code base and one CPU.
Yep. It makes sense for them. So now the cool question is, though, is could Windows do the same? Or could Linux? Well, Linux could definitely do the same. It has done the same already. So, but can it, is it going to start to become more common? Maybe not. I don't know. We'll find out, I guess. The only problem with Linux is the type of hardware you use is going to depend. Like, for example, our beloved Jide Dan's is destroyed. Mine is also destroyed now.
Well, mine still works. I can still use mine. Still work. He's got a little bit of a cracked screen, but it still works.
But with the 3-year-old OS on it now.
Yeah.
And that's all because I think those had Tegra CPUs, I think, and NVIDIA hasn't supported them in a while. So, and going from one version of Android to the next, you need the core proprietary bits. And that's the problem.
So, Joe, I finally figured out how to open up my headset, and they hid two little Phillips screws, which, until I found the website that said where they were, I didn't notice. I feel kind of stupid about that. Now I can't find those charger boards. I don't know what I did with them. They're within a few feet of me. I know that for sure. But my desk got so messy, and I'm like, that's it. I got to put stuff away, and I have no idea where I put it.
That's one of the things I think we're going to do in the next few days is clean my office out here. So that
I think it's time for the office leaf blower and fire.
Yep. Me too.
I mean, flamethrower. Office leaf blower and flamethrower. Just to do a thorough job here.
Laundry's done.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I thought my time was up.
I got to do laundry, too.
So, Dan, I am like sous-viding madman.
Ooh.
I'll tell you what I like in sous-vide is chicken breast. I buy some Costco chicken breast, and I just cooked four up, and we had some for dinner, and we're going to throw them in the fridge, and... You know, eat them for lunch and dinner for the rest of the week. And I figured Dan would have a segue into that, but...
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said because I stepped away to get the buzzer turned off.
Oh, I was just saying I sous vide like 8 chicken breasts from Costco. And,
there
you go. We had dinner and, now we're going to have... Yeah,
for dinner.
Yeah, so, No. It's like my wife and I split one. Skylar had half another one because there were some pretty big ones in there. And, we'll have them for lunch and dinner for the rest of the week or, whatever, as it goes.
Now, would you just sear them afterwards?
Yeah, I threw them on the grill, you know, 5 minutes aside. It, pretty much everything I sous vide, I throw on the grill afterwards.
Okay.
Gotta get that Maillard reaction there, and it makes meat taste good.
Is that what it is?
It's a delicious. Because
I sous vide'd chicken legs.
Buy Cooking for Geeks. It's a good book.
Yeah. Yeah, I sous vide'd chicken legs, and my wife wasn't too happy about it, but I didn't put them on the grill as long as we normally grill chicken legs.
Why wasn't she happy with them?
I think because it wasn't grilled enough. She likes them kind of crispy.
Okay.
She likes them freaking burnt.
I enjoy them a little on the crispy side, too. So, you know, cooking sous vide, I definitely dig it. I'm really like, chicken breast is really good. Filet mignon is really good. I've been cooking cheaper steaks because the steak prices have been going crazy. So it makes the sucky steaks better.
I do mostly chicken in my sous vide these days. I've done sausage and stuff like that. Sausage is a little bit of a pain in the butt if you're not using a vacuum sealer. If you're just using the immersion method, it's a little, sometimes going to be a little tough because they're irregular size and get air bubbles in between them and they start to float up to the top.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you could remedy that a little bit by, like, you know, slipping in a butter knife in the bag with it so it holds it down.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get some really good. I love my sous vide. Did I tell you what happened, Rich?
No.
So I don't know if you got the one that I have, or whatever, but like the bottom of the one that I have has this plastic piece on the bottom that you can rotate and it will come off and like you can clean underneath it and stuff. Well, I don't know what happened, but it fell off the counter to one day and it cracked two of the tabs off on that plastic piece. So it only has one plastic piece to hang on with, right? And I got to be careful when I put it in the water that it doesn't fall off, because if it does, then it doesn't do the circulation properly.
Ah, okay. Have Joel print you one.
Yeah, but there we go. I wrote to the company. I was like, I sent him an email. I was like, hey, can I just, you know, can I get a piece? Can I get this part? Can I buy it somewhere? I don't want to have to buy a whole new one because it works perfectly fine, but I never heard back from him.
That sucks.
That was like right before
The whole base will come off mine. So you rotate it like 90 degrees and it slips off the heating elements.
The piece on the bottom?
Well, the whole cylinder portion that gets submerged, you rotate it like 90 degrees and the whole thing will come off and exposes everything. Because I didn't know that, because I guess I'd have to read the manual. And then I looked at it one day, and I'm like, wait a second. This looks like it's going to, you know, like, rotate. I'm like, son of a, it does. And because what I've been doing to clean it is you put in a 50-50 vinegar water mix. And that's how I've been cleaning it. And I'm like, oh, I can directly clean it. So that's cool.
There you go. So what kind of container do you... You use it?
Just a metal pot.
Okay, a metal pot.
Yeah, it's the sous vide stuff, like the containers are brutally effing expensive. I could get a storage bin at Walmart and cut a hole in it for the sous vide, and you know,
yeah, it would work just fine.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I don't need to pay $50. For, you know, some Walmart storage bin with a hole in the top. In fact, I got to put that on my Walmart list now.
Mm-hmm.
Because realistically, if you're going to cook a number of steaks for people or something like that, having a rack, you know, a metal rack that you can put the pieces of meat in and divide them up so there's flow between them, and, you know, a big enough container... Also, if the container is insulated enough, I mean, think about your I mean, it's the opposite. Heating is, of course, the opposite because heat rises, cold stays low. Those stupid, what are the mugs called? Why can't I think of the name? You know, where you put an ice cold drink and it's still damn cold, the Yetis.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
So the stupid Yeti, I can't believe how well they work. But it's funny, something hot, you know, an hour, it's not hot anymore. But something, you know, if you fill it full of ice and water, next day it's full of ice and water.
I don't buy the Yetis. I buy the Walmart or Sam's Club knockoffs on those.
I don't buy the Yetis either. I got one free. Actually, all of the Yeti stuff I got free.
That's what you get for going to gun shows, huh?
Well, the invite-only gun shows.
Mm-hmm.
That Pat doesn't go to. Pat, I don't know if there's a IV-8A shoot this year or not. No official word yet.
You have a garden at your house, Joel? Not Joel, Rich. I know you don't, Joel. I think Pat does, right?
No,
well, I you know I'm growing dragon fruit, right?
Are you really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got a whole video on, if you go to my YouTube channel.
You can grow those in Orlando where you live, of course.
We went to your YouTube channel today.
Yeah, what'd you say? You're still alive.
An angry grandpa. That's what we saw.
Yeah, angry Elmer Fudd.
Angry Elmer Fudd. yeah, if you go to my April 1st video, it was actually an April Fool's video. I said I wasn't going to be doing gun content anymore, and I was going to be doing just gardening. And I kind of give you a tour of my dragon fruit. So I've got like 15 different species of dragon fruit right now. Let's see. I've got flowers set on some of my Vietnam white, so I should have like three pieces of fruit in a month on this one. I got another Vietnam white, actually one, two. I've got two other Vietnam white with one bud each on them, and I've got an American beauty with a bud on it. That's pretty much the roundup of the mature plants I have. The other plants, if I'm lucky, I might in the fall get some fruit. Like dragon fruit, you get fruit twice a year. And most of my species are self-pollinating, but sometimes they need an assist. Even though they're, you know, basically hermaphroditic, you need to get the pollen in the right place. And so I did miss one self-pollinator, believe it or not, didn't pollinate, and it's next to firebush, and the firebush in the morning sounds like a turbine engine. There's so many bees in it. I'm like, how could this huge flower not get pollinated by the bees? And it didn't. But now that I probably talked more about dragon fruit than anybody would ever want to know, if you're real interested, and I'm actually growing seedlings and grafting different species onto existing mature rootstock. So yeah, I'm kind of deep and crazy into it. But there's a great website, YouTube site. It's Richard Lee is the guy's name, and it's Grafting Dragon Fruit. So if there's he's got a volume of dragon fruit information there if there's anything you ever want to know.
So when do you expect to have fruit?
For the first batch of fruit, I think about 30 days. I'd have to look it up precisely, but the Vietnam white, I think, is like 40, 45 days to mature once pollinated.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, there's two fertilizers that I've been using. There's Floranova Grow and Floranova Bloom. So once they start budding, I give them the Floranova Bloom every other week. But the ones that are rooted and growing, I give Floranova Grow every week. And that is like dragon fruit crack. It's crazy how fast they grow.
That's pretty awesome. We got a bunch. My wife's been growing potatoes and corn and peppers, tomatoes, peas.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we've had Swiss chard, turnips.
I got some tomatoes growing in my pool area just because I tomatoes, actually, corn is tough with bugs. As a kid, I took popcorn, actually grew it. And when it was mature, I peeled it open. It was just full of bugs. So
that's protein,
I don't know,
baby.
What. Yeah, yeah. Sous vide. Didn't want that much protein. Yeah. Yeah. No.
Dang.
But, like, one of the things trying to keep pests away from the dragon fruit is I've been using neem oil, but it seems as though there's still ants that get in there and they'll eat up the dragon fruit pretty good. And I think some other critters are getting in. Neem, NEEM.
Okay.
And, you know, neem is supposed to keep, you know, bugs and stuff away, but apparently these ants, neem oil just doesn't do it. And it's interesting, like, once the ants start eating something, they'll eat the whole damn thing. Like, I had a shoot growing, and it was nice and big, and next day it was, like, missing a quarter of it, next day it was missing half, next day it was gone. I was like, holy cow. It's okay in, not that I'm happy about it, but if they're localized eating and eat one whole thing as opposed to random eating a bit out of everything, then that's a real pain in the ass. Which is actually why Quaker parakeets are considered a
delicacy?
Nuisance.
Oh.
A nuisance because they'll take one bite out of every piece of fruit on a tree.
You love it, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what I almost did this week? Almost.
Mm-hmm.
Almost pulled that trigger and installed OpenSUSE.
Really? Why didn't you?
Because I was too busy. I have everything all set up. I downloaded the image. I just had to put it on a USB stick, and I was like, I didn't. I was going to do Tumbleweed network install, and I didn't get an opportunity to do it yet. Because I'm like, why not? I've been rocking Fedora for a couple of months. That was pretty good. It's time to do some OpenSUSE. That's what Joe says we should be running, OpenSUSE.
Yes, you've always heard me say that forever.
Yeah, when it was the Linux Mint show that encouraged me to install OpenSUSE.
Yep. Well, that was Moss.
Yeah. Like, go back to the old... SUSE was the first distribution that actually, like, worked out of the box for me without a lot of fiddling around. Way back in the day. Like, worked perfectly. With my NVIDIA graphics card that I had at the time, back in 1997 or 8, I think it was. Without having to fiddle around too much. With trying to find the right, like, remember when you have to run X386 setup?
Yes.
And you'd have to match your graphics card. You have to find the number that matches it just right. And if it wasn't a perfect match, you could try, like, something similar to it.
You had to do Control Alt in backspace to kill it. Was that
yes.
right?
Yeah. If it didn't work out, and even sometimes it would, like, do some wacky shit to your... If you didn't choose the right monitor frequency settings,
yeah,
the refresh rate,
yeah,
mess everything all up.
Yeah.
And so it would be on... You could do Control-Alt-F1-2-3-4-5-6, and then F7 would
server
was running. I don't want to do that on my system now. I don't know. If I tried doing that, I don't know if it would mess with the mumble settings. I'm pretty sure you could switch. But then they started taking all that away. Like, what was it, like, mid like 2013 or 14 or something, they started taking away the ability to get, you know, exit out of the X server with control alt backspace.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't, that doesn't really work anymore. I think you could re-enable it. I forget where it is and what's, what it was, what it is.
Backing out of the X server, what, control alt F4?
No, control backspace it used to be. You could switch to a virtual or another console. Like, did usually control alt 1, 2, 3, wait, control F1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 were consoles in it. Well, I think 6 wasn't. 1 through 5 were, 7, 6 wasn't, or maybe it was, depending on your distribution. And 7 was where the X server was running on. Way back in the good old days.
Yes, indeedy.
Greybeard asks, what's the advantage of OpenSUSE over CentOS? I would think OpenSUSE has a little more, if you're running a desktop, a little more friendly package offering than CentOS. CentOS is kind of great for a server. I don't know if I would run it as desktop. I mean, I guess you could enable RPM Fusion, I think, for CentOS, but still, it's kind of, I don't know. I would venture to guess that OpenSUSE is probably, unless you really, really strip it down, is a lot heavier footprint than CentOS is. I mean, CentOS is pretty light out of the box, if I don't. I don't know if I recall correctly, but I don't know if I server wise, it's a good question. I don't know. I remember when Novell switched to SUSE for their server product, putting that their NetWare products on top of SUSE Enterprise Edition, and I thought that was kind of, I mean, it ran pretty well, but if you wanted to do other things on it, it was a little pokey.
So, was the death of Novell that networking became basically bundled in the OS and nobody gave a crap anymore?
I think largely Microsoft's bundling of their network services caught up, and then, you know, I don't want to say they surpassed Novell. I think Novell's e-directory services were a little better than Microsoft's Active Directory at the time.
So they had LDAP.
E-Directory did a lot of great stuff. The only problem I felt with Novell is, I mean, Windows Server was kind of a bear to work with, but light years easier than Novell's server operating system.
Okay, yeah.
That thing was a black box of hell, and it was not friendly and it was kind of like using the remember way back in the day, I think it was Norton had a graphical interface for,
yes,
for Windows, for DOS.
Midnight, like, yes. Commander.
Yeah, Novell's interface for their services was like that, but even more Spartan. And it was just mostly menu and text driven, and the stuff underneath was just obscure. So you had the complexity of getting that to run and doing upgrades, and then it was, you had to have another like application, a client application on top of Windows to have it integrate into the E-Deck directory, and Microsoft just had that all bundled inside. Not to mention, originally NetWare was on, IPX was their protocol, and then like everything moved to IP, so then they had to jump on the IP bandwagon. And Microsoft, like every time that they did an upgrade, it would just break the Novell client. It was such a headache.
So that's
eventually people were like, screw it. You know,
then the worst thing though, Dan, that Novell ever came up with was Novell GroupWise.
Ugh. I remember was, GroupWise, man.
The mail server and client.
I thought GroupWise was okay.
It was trash, man.
I you know what? I liked GroupWise, but again, like the server operating system, it was such a bear to work with.
Yep.
Like when things went sideways on that, oh my goodness, it was. So they had that in ZenWorks. ZenWorks was freaking awesome, but it was so complex to get working and set up. I mean, we had gold support with Novell for a while, and you know, we jumped on the ZenWorks. I jumped on the ZenWorks bandwagon, right? Do you know what ZenWorks was? Anybody know what ZenWorks was?
I just remember the term.
I heard of it, but...
So ZenWorks was supposed to be this, like, automation solution where you could control and lock down desktops and then deploy applications out and revoke those applications by the, you know, through the eDirectory services. So you would start, like, the ZenWorks client and you would record, like, it would take a snapshot of the system, and then you would install software on the system, and then you'd take another snapshot, and it would package up all the changes were made. So then if you wanted to deliver like Internet Explorer or Netscape Navigator or any application that you want, you would capture that and deliver it. So then when somebody sat down and logged in at that computer, and if that application wasn't on there, it could just drop it right onto the system. And I used to go back and forth with their support services because I would do that with the like the educational software back in the 90s, like the Reader Rabbit and crap like that. And that was like invariably it would work like 95% of the way. But
and
then
Reader
like
Rabbit wasn't really designed to be deployed that way.
No, it wasn't. You know, crap like that. But I got it working. I mean, it was, but. Again, to do all that was a lot of investment to get in there. And I was the only one, like, in our whole out of all the schools that we were doing, I was the only one that took the time to do all that. So it was like nobody else was messing with ZenWorks at all. But then they ported all that stuff on top of SUSE Linux, or they were in the process of doing it, and that's when I left the school district shortly after that. I mean, they had their web server. That was a beast to work with. And then when they switched over to Apache, it made it a little easier, but man. You had to have, like, working with NetWare was like working with Cisco stuff. Only it wasn't like a different operating system for every single product.
Yep.
Oh. And if you do a lot of work with Cisco stuff, Rich?
Just the PIX, PIX firewall.
Okay. Because I remember, like, we'd sit down and, like, if you wanted to go out and look at the Cisco routers, like, the operating system and all the documentation was easy to find and kind of use, look at. But then, like, they had this Catalyst series of switches where it was a completely different operating system than the routers. And then each Catalyst had a different, like, OS. And every time that they came out with an update for it, it changed stuff all the time. And it was such a bastard to work with. And they were such pricks about, you had to have special logins to get to things and stuff. It was such a pain in the ass.
Oh yeah, glad I don't do that crap anymore.
Mm-hmm. Wow, GroupWise is still around.
Serious?
Wow.
That's what Greybeard's saying in the IRC.
Who does GroupWise then?
Who's supporting?
I thought Novell is long gone.
Micro Focus. Who? The Who people?
You said Micro Focus, the COBOL people. They make COBOL for PCs.
Oh, do they? Well, let me see what. Well, they I'm looking did. At. Yeah,
COBOL right. And GroupWise in the same company.
Yeah, wow. we see where they're going with their company, rescuing technologies that should be dead, right?
Indeed. That's not surprising.
No, I guess
that's like right before we left.
Right before what?
Right before I left the college. Right before I left the college, they just switched from GroupWise to Office 365, which is now Microsoft 365.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, as much as I hate this idea, you know, this, I'm like, why would a company, if they're going to choose a communication system, why would they not go with like Google or Microsoft? Like, why would you go with GroupWise today?
Or Sendmail for that matter. I mean, Sendmail is great, but you know.
Well, I mean.
But well, why do you want to run your own email system now?
You know, that's the thing, is if you're going to go to running your own email system, I can see doing, go do it on Linux or something. But why would you go, I can't imagine the cost of GroupWise. Is that, I don't know. Just seems like it's such a lot of work and cost, and maybe Greybeard's running it. That's why he's pimping it. Well, yeah, okay. He says the obvious reason to go with GroupWise is because you've been using it for 30 years. Maybe that's the case, right? I guess.
Is it that old? I didn't think it was that old. 20 maybe, but not 30.
That's a good question. How old is GroupWise? I wonder if there's a Wikipedia page about it. Well, here's a school district that has their Novell web access page that's linked. Novell GroupWise 8, and there's a login. It's still up and running, but it's not on a secure site. Why is it not secure? Connection not secured. WebAct JPPSS.
Oh, SSL? Wow.
Holy crap, GroupWise 8? I can't believe. Connection speed, high broadband or low dial-up? Come on. Really? Is that they are still running that? Oh, I'm gonna put it in the IRC if you really want to see this. Holy crap. It's there. I can't imagine that. Oh my goodness. Okay, the Wikipedia page.
It's Louisiana, huh?
So the stable release for GroupWise right now is 18.1. That site I linked to is running 8. I don't remember when 8 came out. So, oh, crap. Wait. So... So we're almost at 30 years The Group Wise 4.1, the first Novell release, debuted in 1994. But I guess it was... WordPerfect developed. The WordPerfect Corporation developed it. The first... So emailing and calendaring and scheduling were added to the WordPerfect office suite in 2.0 in 1988. So technically, it's 32 years old. Impressive. There you go, Rich. Still there, Joel?
I am here.
We got rid of everybody, apparently. So, Microfocus acquired GroupWise in April of 2014. Or, that's when they picked it up.
Well, it goes back towards some of the stuff like that we've kind of with stuff I've seen since I moved to my new team where, you know, we adopt what clients had previously had on their own on-prem systems. And I see so much stuff that's just done with, like, you know, things we used to do 10 years ago that we would never do now. But we still have to do it and support it, which is crazy, but it's the truth. And that's the same thing where some of these school districts, they just don't have the money to spend on the upkeep of technology. They figure, well, it still works. Well, it still works means that you're opening yourself up for security vulnerabilities, and you know this is where. A lot of these security breaches can come from is people just don't upgrade their technology.
I can't believe that there is still...
Yeah.
Hey.
Which reminds me, tomorrow I'm going to be calling our air conditioner folks and find out what's going on with the part that we need. Because we've been over a week and they still, actually almost two now, and they haven't called us back yet. It's like customer service seems to be an add-on nowadays. it's like we went to the campsite because of the virus. The camp store was closed, so I had to frantically go use my phone, log into their website, and figure out what site am I supposed to be on. And then drive up, and I started setting up. And even then, I just called them the main line number and said, there's nobody here. Can I just start setting up? And they're like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And I'm like, okay. And they had signs all over the place, too, like the bathrooms. You weren't supposed to have any more than three people in the bathroom at any one time. Even though there's, like, the men's room, there was two urinals and two regular potties. You know, and there was three shower stalls. I never saw anybody but Luke and I, or my wife and Luke and I. That doesn't mean that, you know, I saw other people at other campsites, but... Whenever we went to those places, that's the only people I ever saw. So it was very safe because there was hardly anybody there. I would say the campsite wasn't even 50% capacity. They were more like 25%. Most of them were up where we were. It also goes to note where I need to note of the places I go. Which ones have shade? Because the one site we were at was beaten down 90 degrees in sun when we got there on Sunday. And I'm sitting there hammering tent pegs in, and Moist, like, how long's it gonna take? I'm like, I don't know. Shut up. Leave me the fuck alone. I'm like, but camping's fun, but as you get older, now you really appreciate those folks that are sleeping in next site next to you with air conditioning running. My customer service, though, I mean, it's just like, it's so incredibly not a standard anymore.
That's great. We got to start wrapping this up, man. Glad you had a good time.
Yes, we do.
On your trip. Happy post happy anniversary again.
Thank you.
Glad that you had a good time. Any last words?
Words.
Yeah.
One word I'll have. Don't be afraid to, when you're out and about in a place you've never been, don't be afraid to check out a place that looks unfamiliar or that, I won't say looks sketchy, but that you've never been to before. In my case, it was this gas station in little town of Gloucester, which is basically one street that's maybe a half mile long, you know, a not very big city. But there's this big, relatively large, for convenience store-wise, gas station. And I went in there, and they had some of the most incredible baked goods I've ever seen at a gas station. And I bought some. And I brought some. I bought one yesterday, and then on the way out this morning, I bought another one. incredible food at these mom-and-pop stores. Check them out, no matter where you're at.
All right. With that, I'm going to play out our promos. Thanks a lot, Joel. Everybody have a great, safe week. Here they are. Are you?
Oh, my God. It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
Hi, folks, this is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Haunty Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
While you were making Egg Foo Young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
Mm-hmm.
Oh! don't know what the hell happened. We started talking about Novell and everybody disappeared. Joel left, Rich left, Pat left.
No, I'm here.
No, I didn't say Joel. I said Joe. Joe left.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know.
Up and disappeared.
Weird.
Oh, freaking tired. Say goodnight, Joe. I'm stopping recording.
Night, Joe.
Burrito and beef burritos.
I haven't had Taco Bell since it's got to be February.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well,
they deliver here, so.
Well, did you have it delivered or did you go pick it up?
Oh, I went and picked it up. Me and the wife decided we needed to get out of the house for a few minutes, so she got Wendy's and I got Taco Bell.
Well, you didn't take the kids with you?
No, we left them at home.
What did they eat?
Wendy's.
Oh, okay. Well, wait. How come you didn't get Wendy's?
Because I didn't want Wendy's. Because
you didn't want Wendy's, right? Wait, is Wendy's still serving burgers where you are?
Yeah.
Okay, because I heard something that for a bit there, they, in some places they weren't able to serve burgers. They weren't able to get meat or whatever.
I don't know. Maybe they got somebody to, you know, collect up all the cats.
Ay, ay, ay.
But that was Taco Bell with the cats.
No, Taco Bell's rats, right?
Weasels.
Meat's meat. Once you cook it, it's fine.
Just grind it up, put it in that grinder. Then they just switch the template on the grinder, and now it's refried beans, and switch it again, and it's chicken.
Yeah, okay.
That just depends on the grind.
Ugh. Unless there's some chicken pandemic that I don't know about, it should be easy to get chicken.
Whoa, Claudio's in the IRC. Oh, I didn't see that. More dancing. Alright, let me make sure the stream's going.
I suppose I should join the IRC.
Oh, it's up to you.
Sounds like work.
How much work can it be? Is to fire up... What do you prefer? Like, what's your preferred IRC client? Yeah, is that it?
Discord.
Discord. Does a Discord client allow you to connect to just standard IRC?
No.
Wow, I was going to say, I didn't think it, I wasn't aware that it did.
A hex chat, mostly because it's built in.
Is hex chat derivative of X chat? That was it, right?
I think so. I can't help it that, you know, IRC reminds me of the 90s.
The best part of the 90s.
Some of the best parts of the 90s, yeah.
Okay, yeah, HexChat is an IRC client based on XChat.
That does not surprise me.
What?
Yeah, Pigeon's nice.
So what is the license XChat is under?
Help about doesn't say license. Let me click on license. is free software. You can redistribute or modify it under the terms of the GNU General Public License. So, GNU GPL.
No, that's HexChat.
Yeah, HexChat.
So, if you go to the HexChat page, it says, HexChat is an IRC client based on XChat, but unlike HexChat, it's completely free for both Windows and Unix-like systems. Since XChat is open source, it's perfectly legal.
XChat. Well, that's weird.
So I'm like,
HexChat has a Wikipedia page, but XChat doesn't.
Why does XChat leak so much memory? I'm on their fact.
Charles, come help. So,
see, I tried to look at the XChat license, but it doesn't say. I think I got it. So XChat, I do believe for Unix systems is free, but for Windows, you have to register it for a one-time fee of $19.99. Or you could use it free on Windows for 30 days. So I guess if you want to go and compile it yourself under Windows and build it, I think you could.
Probably.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Joel?
And you should be able to get it to run under Windows subsystem for Linux.
I get what. Okay, so
yep.
Basically they say, what about the LGPL libraries you link with? They give you the full access to the source code if you wish to download it. The readme.html file has further details. This file is not useful for the average user. If in doubt, you don't need this. So I guess if you can compile it yourself, you're good to go. You can run it for free, but if you want to use their binary, you have to register it after 30 days for $20, one-time fee. Which,
yeah, but it's free on Linux, so if you make it run on the Windows subsystem for Linux.
All right, let's get something clear here, Joe. All right? How long has XChat been around?
I was probably using it in the 90s.
And how long has the Windows subsystem for Linux been around?
Not that long.
15 minutes.
Right, so I get what you're saying, but I even think HexChat predates the Windows subsystem for Linux, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty sure it does.
So my assumption is HexChat spun off from XChat and decided to make everything free because XChat was not providing a binary for Windows. Whoever was providing a binary for Windows was charging for it, which they can do because they're giving you the source code, but they're compiling it for free, you know, for a cost. So I don't know, man. So saying you can run it under the Windows Linux subsystem for Windows, you probably can. You could have probably run it under Sigwin back in the day.
Might have sure. Once or twice.
Well, there you go. Then you didn't have to pay the $20.
Yeah, but I had to install Sigwin.
Well, you could run Nopix then, right?
Don't get me wrong. I liked Sigwin. The only thing I didn't like about Sigwin was downloading it and installing it.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass.
But Is it still, it's still available, isn't it?
Sure, I think so.
Like, why not? Yeah, it's got to be out there somewhere.
Yep. It's nice being on vacation.
I'm on vacation every Friday this month.
By choice?
We just got back.
Yes, by choice.
Okay. There you go. We just got back from our little camping trip. Wasn't too bad, except when we were putting a tent up, I broke a pole.
So you broke your what?
It was just like the end. The end snapped.
Just the tip?
Yeah, just the tip. So I was able to make it work for most of the weekend, although we had storms. Now, fortunately, that didn't really affect the water getting in, but it would pull on top of the rain fly, so it would just push up and it would go down the side of the tent. It didn't get too wet inside. None of the beds got wet or anything important got wet. But although
nothing
my
important.
No, my drone was in the tent the first night. After that night, I just locked it in the car. And I think this camping trip is gonna give us the impetus to start looking for an RV or a pop up or something, because really like doing it, like pounding your pegs in and
your pounding peg,
the tent pegs. But
that's how
doing
now
that
man.
Was a pain in the ass. Yeah,
just the tip though.
Did you actually start the show already?
No, we were waiting for you to get back from Taco Bell.
Nah, I wouldn't wait for me. I was in another meeting for church, but
yeah.
So we're going to start shopping. I don't know what we're going to get. I don't know. I'm kind of pushing more towards one of the pop-up campers. My wife doesn't like that idea, but I think what it is I just got to show it to her and show her that it's not a big deal. And the main reason I'm looking at that is I might be able to get one that I can actually freaking tow with my Traverse versus if you get like a Class C or a Class A, you know.
Yeah, you need to get a big truck.
Well, those are full RVs with motors. You know, a Class C or a Class A. You'd have to tow something though, like a car or something, so that you'd have something to go in if you want to go into town and get something. You know, if you don't, then you pretty much have to tear up camp every time you need to go somewhere. So. Depending on what you have, it could be a pain in the butt, you know. But we'll see. I don't know. I'm also pop ups are more like budget. You know, you're talking like a Class A can be worth more than my house.
Yeah.
Easily.
Absolutely.
Even
yes.
Used. So, I mean, I priced a used one out earlier today. It was like $150,000. I'm like, no.
What are you talking about?
RVs.
What do you classify as an RV?
It's going to be something that you... An RV is... What I would classify as an RV is like a Class A or a Class C. Class C is like based on like a truck. Frame. Class A is more like a bus. Technically, you can probably run the gambit, though. It's something you would tow to something, you know, you would drive.
Well, see, that's my question is like, to me, an RV has always been a fully contained vehicle.
Yes, right? that's what I would call an RV myself. Yeah,
and other
things are just campers.
Yeah,
you know?
And I hear other people like so, and maybe I'm completely mistaken, but I got the impression that Chris Fisher, who used to run the Linux Action Show, and
he lives in a Class A.
He does have a Class A. It sounded sometimes like he had a camper, which he called an RV. but I wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, that would be definitely I've seen pictures of his. He okay. definitely has – that's definitely what I would call a Class A.
Okay.
Right, which is the pretty much the top level you can get. See, for me, the pop-up camper is basically this thing where you crank up the top.
Right.
And you might have some jacks that you have to put up to keep the ends up. But those ones you would of those, I would be perfectly happy with one that just provided me a place to sleep and maybe electrical outlets, you know, let me plug it into the camp supply, rent an air conditioner maybe. You know, that would be fine. I don't have to have a kitchen there. It'd be nice, but it's not required. Same thing with the shower. It'd be nice, but not required, because most campgrounds have a shower somewhere. So, you know, that, and it doesn't bug me to use those. I mean, do I prefer to use my own shower? Yes. But, when I'm camping, I don't really give a shit. You know, I'm fine with a tent. If I got a better tent, I would be fine. Like, I'm looking at, if we don't do that, then I'm at least going to try and get us a better tent. They have tents
there. And a generator?
I don't need a generator.
Well, either that or you need some battery packs to be able to run your CPAP machine.
Right, but most campgrounds have electric, at least the ones I would go to. Getting electric is, in most state park campgrounds, is very easy. Although, I will say, if I had a generator, there are some pretty dang cool sites that I saw at Baroque. One of the areas we went to was the, they called it, they had three different, like, boat docks where people who have their own boats can, like, dock their boat. And a lot of people just leave it there. You know, I'm probably sure they pay like a fee to the state park or something like that to leave it there for X amount of time, you know. But right next to the third dock, which is where we went to take Luke fishing for a little bit, didn't catch anything. Of course, if fish were easy to catch, it would be called catching, not fishing. Anyway, but. They actually had campsites right there, but they were all the primitive style. They had a they had a fire ring, they had a picnic table, and not much else. And they were right there, right next to the lake, which is pretty nice. But I don't mind staying in the more populated part of the campground. That's fine. It's perfectly fine by me. I'd like the primitive stuff, because a lot of the primitive sites are a little bit more friendlier to tent camping, whereas where I stayed this time really wasn't that great. My tent barely fit. I have an 8-person tent that we use, so. And I don't give a crap what anybody says. That's not an 8-person tent. Not by the time you get everybody's crap in it. Yeah,
well, it's an 8-person tent, not an 8-person plus crap tent.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, most tents are rated for basically how many people can you lay down on the floor, which I think is kind of a stupid rating, but that's what they're rated by. Yeah, here I'm looking at Specialty RV, which is, I passed it on the way back down by it's kind of between here and Lancaster, Ohio. See, I think this is a brand new one. 2020 Forest River Berkshire XL 40E looks like a Class A. $245,000. It's more than my house. It's twice the amount of my house. $1,500 a month. Yeah, that's not happening. So, that's why I gotta keep telling that. My wife's like, well, you're too worried about money. Well, that's why you're looking at pop-ups. I'm like, I'm looking at affordable. And if you want something that we can afford that's better than a tent, that's going to be it. You know, pop-ups actually can be quite nice, too. You know, they don't have to be crap. Like, she's used to the one of a good friend of mine, much older friend. He's retired. He worked for Lucent Technologies. He's a ham radio guy. But back 23 years ago when we got married, the week we came back, that would have been this weekend, was field day, and I was participating. I was already planning on it before the wedding happened. In any event, that was actually probably my wife's first experience with a tent. but we watched my friend put up his – he has like a – had at the time, I would say mid-'80s era pop-up. And – It was very old, so things weren't working all that well. So things were jamming and stuff like that. And that's her impression of that, not a brand new one. So, all right, let's go.
Are we ready?
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Tech can really tie into this because if I do get like a full on driving one, I'm going to equip this thing to be Jesus with tech. Namely, a backup camera for one.
No, that's a good idea. All right, here we go.